we're back on the Carolina Outdoors. Christopher, it's always so good to talk to Sam Hall.
It is.
That man is so easy to talk to. You could do about three segments with him without ever getting started.
Oh, yeah.
But always interesting when you think about produce. You know, these days we go to the store and we buy what's sitting on the shelf if it looks good, and if it doesn't, we walk by it. But let me tell you what. When you're in the business of growing produce, you've got to be thinking way ahead, don't you?
Mm-hmm. You do.
I mean, just like rotating peach crops, you know, I asked him how long peach trees were productive. He said 12 to 15 years, and that made me think I've got to get some new peaches planted because mine are getting old. So
yeah, you got to think far ahead.
Got to get ahead of that one. So I guess that's farming in general, whether it's produce or corn. You've got to be planning ahead, that's for sure. And as you know, the first part of this week, I was out in Missouri, went out to see my mom, who's in a nursing home and not doing well. And when I do go out there, I stay at our family farm, which has been in the family for about 140 years now. And I stay in my great-grandfather's house, which is well-built and still standing strong. And it's always really restful and enjoyable to be out there, and there's just so many things to do on the farm. You know, again, just thinking ahead. My niece's husband farms our farm now and has got everything ready for the corn crop to go in here. Probably within a couple of weeks, they'll start planting corn out there. So, you know, spring is here, and the farmers are really getting ready to lay on the diesel fuel, as I say, out there in the Midwest and get those big machines going strong and hard to get those crops in out there. Now, One of the things that I really enjoy this time of year is kind of a continuation of deer hunting. And deer hunting tends to be almost a year-round project for a lot of people anymore, including me. I run trail cameras nearly year-round on our farm in Missouri, as well as my farm in South Carolina. I try to do a lot of things to improve our deer quality and the deer herds along the way. And there's a lot of information out there on quality deer management. And if you go to that website, Quality Deer Management, there's a lot of suggestions and ideas for people to improve their deer herds and improve their deer habitat. And one of the things I've been doing over the last couple of years, and I've told a lot of people about it, is planting chestnut trees out there.
Really?
Chestnuts produce a lot more mass or a lot more food than an oak tree. They produce it very quickly, about 4 or 5 years into their life. And deer would much rather eat chestnuts than acorns, as would turkeys. So that's my kind of permanent food plot. I planted a dozen trees last year and another dozen this year. And a lot of people I've told about this are doing it as well. So I think that's a great idea for anyone who has either a long-term lease or owns some land that wants to lure the deer in there. And, of course, the chestnuts are available to the deer during the late part of bow season, early part of gun season, so makes some good picking. But one of the things I look forward to in March is shed antler hunting. Deer have antlers, not horns. Antlers fall off once a year and are regrown every year. So it's really interesting to go out and look for the antlers in the fields and along the edges of the wood lines and so forth. And in doing so, you're going to learn a lot about where your deer spend late winter. And it's all about food source and shelter from the wind and the cold. So a lot of the south slopes and slopes that lead to food sources and all are where you're going to find the antlers. And in an urban setting, a lot of the creek bottoms and so forth, where the deer spend an awful lot of their time, will have some oak trees, like the water oaks here, have a lot of small acorns that the deer eat really late. So it's a good opportunity, even if you live in town, just to use some of the greenways to look for some shed antlers. Now, antlers are a little bit hard to see on the ground because they look just like twigs. They're the same color. They're kind of the same configuration. They're either going to land face up or face down. Face up is when the tines are sticking up, so you're looking for 3 or 4 points sticking up, and usually they're fairly white on the tip, so they're a little easier to find that way. If they land the other way, you're looking at the backside or curved side of them, so they're a little bit harder to see. But it's a great opportunity, and I had an absolutely great day last week, the one day that I spent all day shed antler hunting on our farm in Missouri, and I'm going to have those antlers in the shop for people to stop by and take a look at. I think I found 8 or 9 antlers in that amount of time, including the one.
And I saw pictures of it, Don, and that is from the one.
And for those of you that are regular listeners, I get fixated on one particular deer. That's one of the wonderful things about trail cameras. You get to know the deer population on your property. You get to know age groups, about how old they are. You know, after a while, you start naming them and so forth, and you start kind of keeping track of individual deer. Now, last year, I had 8 different deer that I had identified and were really tracking, and a friend of mine harvested one of those known as 5x3 because that's how his antlers were configured, 5 on one side, 3 on the other. It was a nice, probably 6.5-year-old buck, very mature, very, very nice deer. It's going to make a beautiful trophy for him. But there's been one particular deer I've been after for 2 years because he is non-typical. Non-typical meaning his antlers aren't formed as they usually form, which with brow tine and then several points on each side all sticking straight up. This guy has things going in all different directions, including 2 drop tines, which point down. Now, one of those being over 12 inches long, so a very unusual configuration of a deer. Now, 2 years ago, I found his left antler, which wasn't the most interesting one, and I scored it. The way you score deer is measuring total inches of the tines and diameters and so forth, and it scored roughly 80 inches. Now, if you've got a deer that has 2 of those, obviously that's 160 inches, and if he's got, 160 inches, and if he's got a 16-inch spread, you add that to it, so that's 176-inch deer, which is a trophy anywhere. However, this deer had a far more complicated right side, and I looked long and hard 2 years ago for that right side, never did find it. Well, this year was my year to shine. I found the right side this year. The right side measures 140 inches by itself.
Wow.
All right, now we'll take a little artistic license and add back the 2-year-old left side, which was 80. So we're at 220 inches. That is a trophy deer anywhere in the world. That's beyond a trophy deer. That's near record book year. Again, now add 15, 16 inches for inside spread. What are we at now? Way up there. So you can see I am more than obsessed with this deer. And he made it through season again this year. And obviously, I think, since Bill's not here, I'll tell you, I think I'm going to be gone all November next year.
Okay, I look for
Don't look for me in November. I'm going to be in Missouri because I got a real deer problem, as they say. I am obsessed with this particular deer. Now, this is a big old deer, and I honestly don't know how old he is. I've only ever gotten one picture of this deer in the daylight, which is amazing, and part of the problem. Because now, the older they get, the more nocturnal they get.
Now, have you seen it at night? Because you mentioned the trail cameras.
I have.
Has it been
dozens and dozens and dozens of pictures
wow.
of him
okay.
in, at night, and I'll be glad to show those people if they come by to see our antler collection this week at Jesse Brown's. It's just, you know, I've got him figured out. I know where he likes to be. It's just a matter of catching him in the daylight, and obviously there's going to have to be some doe deer involved to bring him out in the daylight. So hopefully he's not too old to be interested in that.
Sure.
So we're going to do a little bow hunting for him next year so we can get a little earlier start on the season, and then we're going to follow it up in gun season, and I'm going to be spending a whole lot of time in the woods next year, rain, shine, snow, whatever happens in November. So we're looking forward to that opportunity, that's for sure. Now, the antlers drop in the Midwest about the first week in March and usually maybe the second week here, and I know they have dropped here because I've been finding a few on my farms in South Carolina as well. Now, I don't have the number of deer that I have out in Missouri because the food sources are different and so forth, but it is a great time to enjoy that sport here, and it's also a great way to do a little scouting for turkey. Turkey this time of year will be looking for the leftover acorns, so they're going to be near the oak trees and so forth, especially water oaks and things like that that have small acorns, and you're going to find the leaves totally turned over, like you've raked them up. And that's a sign that your turkeys are feeding there, and that's a great place to be early in the mornings and set up with decoys and try to bushwhack those turkeys as they fly down first thing in the morning. They're going to go feed a little bit, and then a little later on, the hens are going to go to nest, and then the gobblers are going to be left to fare for themselves. So always great opportunities on those hardwood ridges this time of year for those turkeys, because they're going to be looking for that food first thing in the morning. They're going to be in a flock. The hens are going to fly down. The gobblers are going to be with them. The gobblers are going to be strutting, gobbling, and trying to collect those hens. And about mid-morning, 10 o'clock or so, the hens are going to go to sit on their nest and lay eggs and do all those girl things. And the gobblers are going to be out there being feisty and looking for love in all the wrong places. And that's that's when they're very susceptible to being called in, and a good opportunity for you there. So won't be long. It'll be North Carolina turkey season. I believe South Carolina opened on the 20th, and you know, it's a time to get out there, so I may have to sneak off a few mornings myself to get down in South Carolina, because there are at least three good gobblers on my farm down there. And like I say, they're mighty tasty dinner guests. Get some fresh vegetables from Bush and Vine and stir up a Thanksgiving dinner for Easter, I guess.
Ooh, I like the way you're thinking. Yeah, wow. Yeah.
Makes a great, great Easter dinner of fresh wild turkey, that's for sure. And they are delicious. People always ask me what a wild turkey tastes like, and I said, not chicken.
Not chicken.
It's, you know, the white meat on a wild turkey is much leaner, can be dry, so you have to be very careful when you cook them not to overcook them. It's also good to stuff them with some apples and things like that to contribute a lot of moisture. So, but it has a wonderful flavor. Now, I have to tell you, the leg meat is nearly inedible. It has a lot of bone in it, a lot of parts that are non-edible, and there's not a whole lot of meat on a wild turkey leg. However, the thighs are quite good, but the breasts themselves are the real highlight, and it's a little bit darker than a normal domestic turkey and a little bit drier, but if you carefully cook it, it's going to be quite delicious. All right, we're going to take a quick break and be back here on the Carolina Outdoors after these messages. Stay tuned.